Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes in the New Testament. 30 Minutes in the New Testament is a 1517 Podcast Network podcast. You can go to 1517.org/podcast and check out all of the other podcasts that are living over there. And while you're over there, make sure you go to all of the things that we have going on. Articles, we have videos, academies, events. Check it all out. You want to come and you want to avail yourself of the bevy of resources that 1517 is putting forward for you. So go ahead and do that. Eric, we are in our second episode going through the book of Hebrews, the sermon of Hebrews, something, whatever this is. The multiple sermons of Hebrews,
yeah, who knows?
This thing, yep, in the Bible from the unknown author. And we ended at verse 4 last week. Got a lot talking about who Jesus is and who Jesus isn't.
Yes, absolutely. And really, I mean, you saw the beginnings of a theme that you're going to see all throughout the gospel to the Hebrews, which is that Jesus is greater. Jesus is better. Last week, we spent a lot of time talking about how he is superior to the angels, which leads us to believe that there were probably some that were making the claim that he was just like an angel or similar to an angel. And we noted that it was maybe understandable based on the fact that the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament is so messianic that people maybe made that kind of mistake and qualified him as being similar. And the author of Hebrews is going to spend all of his time, really all of his time, discussing why Jesus is better than the angels, why Jesus is greater than the law. He's going to spend a lot of time on that, why his sacrifice is more sufficient. I don't know if I can say that, more sufficient, but is truly sufficient to save sinners as opposed to the temporal sacrifices of the temple system. I mean, that's where we're going, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. But before I dive into verse 5, Dan, I do want to note a couple of things. I do want to note a couple of things that you just alluded to. Number one, next year's Here We Still Stand conference in San Diego is sold out already. And sold out. I have to make a note of that. That is an incredible reason to celebrate. We've already sold the thing out in just under 3 weeks. So we're excited about that. We can't wait to get together with everybody who's purchased a ticket to talk about the life and legacy of C.S. Lewis. And then number two, I want to just give a little plug. You mentioned videos for our YouTube page because we are right on the tip of getting our 10,000th subscriber to, yeah, our YouTube page. And there is content constantly being produced for that I think could be helpful and edifying to you. So if you listen to this podcast and you like what you hear, you'll find a lot more of the same kind of thing on our YouTube page. Go over there, check it out, subscribe. We'd really appreciate it.
That's right. So, yeah. And all right. And if you want to, if you're like, oh my gosh, that conference sold out, I was going to go. You can go over there and get on the wait list. There is a wait list. And so you can go sign up for that. So if somebody cancels, you will get notified. And also, just means that you might have to go to the regional event in Bentonville, Arkansas, which registration is open for that. And so that is in the spring. That's in May. And so that will also, and now you know I'm not bluffing, that we haven't pushed that at all, really. That is also going to sell out. It has every time. I ain't joking around. If you want to come, go get that ticket. All right, let's do this into Hebrews chapter 2.
All right, so the author of Hebrews begins in verse 5, or at least begins where we're beginning today. For it was not to angels that God subjected the world to come, of which we are speaking. It has been testified somewhere, what is man that you are mindful of him, or the son of man that you care for him? You made him for a little while lower than the angels. You have crowned him with glory and honor, putting everything in subjection under his feet. So here again, you see the author of Hebrews making the case, very importantly, because he's writing to a Hebrew audience from the Old Testament, specifically Psalm chapter 8 here, saying Jesus is the object of this verse, and he is being presented as being the one that has everything in subjection under his feet. Get this through your head. Jesus is greater.
Yeah, you know what I like about this verse too is you see the humanness of whoever this is, because you have this. It has been testified somewhere. This is like, I take so much comfort in this particular way of speaking, because this is, I know it's in the Bible. I can't remember where it's at offhand, but let me quote it to you. There's so much of the Bible I can quote that I'm like, oh man, I don't know exactly which verse it is. But like, I think it's in Ephesians. Maybe it's in there somewhere. Chapter 2, I don't know. and but you can quote the thing. That seems like what this is too. And this is why it feels so much like a sermon, man. Like that this guy is talking and then says, yes. Look, you know the verse. It says this. What is man yes. that you are mindful of him, or the son of man that you care for him, that you made him a little lower than the angels? You have crowned him with glory and honor, putting everything in subjection under his feet. He says that verse is about Jesus. Don't remember exactly where it is. It's one of those psalms.
That's right. I mean, and that is comforting because, you know, there's a lot of times, Dan, that I can't remember the address. I mean, that's what I refer to it as. You know, I'm like, it's I know it's in Ephesians. I'm not sure quite, you know, and there is traditions where if you can't name chapter and verse, then it's sort of seen as suspect. Well, just in case you were feeling unworthy because you can't always remember the address to of the passage that you're referencing, know that you're in line with the people who wrote the Bible.
I don't know how this works for you. The more I read a lot of Bible, and the more Bible I read, the less I know where things are.
Like, yeah, this is I think this is just a function of old age / sanctification.
Well, it's getting older, and it's also just like you're reading and you're studying and you it's a lot, and you aren't you read it a bunch of times, and some of it runs together, man. Some of it gets mixed up, you know.
It's true. I think you and I are testifying to the world that we're getting older. But, you know, nevertheless, he says in verse 8, now in putting everything in subjection to him, speaking of Jesus, he left nothing outside his control. Now, I want to stop there just for a second, Dan, at the end of that sentence, because there are times I think we tend to emphasize the comfort that comes from knowing that Jesus is with us and knowing that Jesus has suffered for us, that he has lived everything that we have lived, yet without sin. I think we're prone to emphasizing that, maybe sometimes at the expense of his control. But it is important to note that that is, in fact, what the author of Hebrews says is true about Jesus, too. There is comfort to be found in knowing that this world that we're in, this universe that we're in, isn't spinning sort of, haphazardly with no one calling the shots. But it's important to note who is calling the shots. And what the author of Hebrews says here is that person is Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, that he is in complete control, even when it doesn't feel like it.
And that's what he's going to address right away. He says, at present, we do not yet see everything in subjection to him.
Yeah, it seems like some things aren't really submitting to the control of the Lord. You ever had this experience in your
including
life?
Including my own heart.
It's just, I've had these experiences, Eric, where things are going on, and you're like, I don't know if this universe is exactly following God's orders or not.
Oh, just a few times, Dan. Yeah. Just a few times. Yes. Whether I look at the news on any given day or whether I look at my own heart, you know, I'm very aware of the fact that, yeah, it doesn't seem that everything is in subjection to him. And it's in those times that it's important to remember the first part of this verse, that yes, God is in fact still working and that this thing is not spinning out of control. And so he continues in verse 9, but we see him who for a little while was made lower than the angels, namely Jesus, crowned with glory and honor because of the suffering of death, so that by the grace of God, he might taste death for everyone.
All right. Now,
this
is some counterintuitive stuff.
Now, this is really important for us who emphasize things like the theology of the cross.
Yes. So we see him who for a little while was made lower than angels. So a little while was here with us, right? To walk this earth. This fully God, fully man, incarnate Christ, namely Jesus, so that's his name, so this is who we saw, crowned with glory and honor. Okay, crowned with glory and honor, why?
What you go to instinctively, Dan, is because he defeated death, because he rose from the dead, because he ascended on high to the right hand of God the Father, which all those things are true. But that's not what he says.
No, instead, the reason that Jesus is crowned with glory and honor is because of the suffering of death, so that by the grace of God, he might taste death for everyone. This is what God has sent him to do, and this is what he has accomplished, and he is crowned with glory and honor because of it.
That's exactly right. What is so glorifying and honoring to Jesus is that what he has done in his death has caused the floodgates of the grace of God to pour out to sinners. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so glorious.
Yeah, and to who? To everyone.
That is, and it's really, it's actually interesting in that the word used for taste here is sort of tasting to the fullest. Every bit of death he has taken upon himself, he's tasted it for all people. So it's more than a taste. I mean, it's I have taken all of it. I've taken every bit of death so that everyone doesn't have to face that death. And again, I want to emphasize all the people.
Everyone. Yes. Yeah.
Everyone.
Yes. So this grace of God is for everyone. And this death that he died is for everyone.
For everyone. This is really in our wheelhouse, Dan, as we emphasize the importance of two little words throughout all of Scripture, which are the words "for you." Mm-hmm. And this is really what he's saying,
yeah,
is,
I mean,
that Jesus is glorified because it's all done for you.
If Jesus' death is for everyone, then Jesus' death is for you.
That is precisely correct. And so he says in verse 10, "For it was fitting that he, for whom and by whom all things exist, in bringing many sons to glory, should make the founder of their salvation perfect through suffering." Now, very important to note here, number one, who is Jesus? Jesus is identified as the founder of our salvation. Now, there's another part that will say he is the founder and perfecter of our salvation. In other words, it's his saving from start to finish. Mm-hmm. Or another way of saying that word founder is, it can be translated in some of your English versions, the author.
Yeah,
the author.
Yes, he wrote your salvation. With his own suffering and death, he has written your salvation. And I like the author language too, because you have, you know, Lamb's Book of Life sort of references there. You have just the grand narrative of salvation from Genesis to Revelation, that he is the one authoring all of this. That salvation is his work. It's his book.
Yeah, yeah. It was actually, this word founder was used in ancient Greek writings for like a heroic figure that would end up finding a city or founding a city, saving the city, and then being in charge of guarding the city for its future. So you're talking about, this is what's all poured into this word, that he's the founder of our salvation. And yet again, how is it done? Through suffering. And this is the antithesis of what you would have expected to find in ancient Greek writings about a heroic figure. He's not, the heroic figure isn't seen as perfect through suffering. He's seen as perfect through victory. Mm-hmm. But over and over again, the author of Hebrews is going to emphasize the significance of Jesus' suffering that makes him superior to the angels and to everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that you'd be made perfect through suffering is a very weird concept. But what's happening is that through his suffering, he has redeemed the world. I mean, he's not only is his work perfect, but he's declared all of us perfect in his work.
Yeah, and it's not as if he was imperfect before the suffering, which is maybe the way that people would want to read it naturally. The word for perfect is complete. It's his work was complete through suffering, is the idea. Mm-hmm. And indeed, so this is why Jesus is so insistent. You know, you and I taught a class on the Gospel of Luke for our academy courses, and you know, we spent a lot of time talking about that hinge verse in Luke 9:51. And then again in 9:53, where it says that Jesus sort of set his face like a flint to go to Jerusalem. Why was that? Because ultimately his purpose was to suffer on the cross, be lifted up for the salvation of the world.
Yeah.
And so that's really the same thing that the author of Hebrews is getting to here. He continues in verse 11, "For he who sanctifies and those who are sanctified all have one source." Now, this could be, and I think the most natural reading of the one source here, it could be that it's talking about God. But, you know, it is interesting also that in the context here, this is spending a lot of time talking about Jesus's humanity and Jesus's identification with us as human beings. And so this also could be talking about when it says, for he who sanctifies and those who are sanctified, all having one source, this could be talking about Jesus's common source with us as having Adam as our first father, or maybe even because it's a writing to the Hebrews, having Abraham as the common father. And yet because of that, he is able, because of his identification with us, he is able to sanctify and make sure and also identify with us as those who are being sanctified. It's not clear either way. The point is, though, God is doing the verbs in Christ.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I mean, I think what you have here is that for he who sanctifies, that is Jesus, and those who are sanctified, that's us, all have one source. This is that our humanity and Christ's humanity comes from the same place.
That's right.
This all comes from Adam, or this
Well, the words right after really kind of help lead you to kind of that understanding, because it says that is why he's not ashamed to call them brothers.
Yeah, and even this all have one source. This can be translated all are of one, right? They're of one kind, right?
So that's
like,
right.
We all came from one, and so yeah, this is why he is not ashamed to call them brothers. Like so. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we're adopted into the family of God, and Christ is our elder brother. That's true. But then you also have, we are all children of Adam, and so we are all brothers in this way as well.
Well, this is an allusion to something that we've talked about here on the podcast before, which is that when we talk about Jesus being at the right hand of God the Father, we are talking about Jesus, the human being. Mm-hmm. He is still human. There is a human on the throne.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that I don't think many people spend a lot of time thinking about, but that is how much Jesus elevates humanity through his life, death, and resurrection. There is a human being on the throne.
Yeah. There is a person who is fully man.
Fully man. I mean, that's an amazing thing. Fully God as well, but fully man still. Mm-hmm. It didn't go away. And so it continues in verse 12, saying, again, quoting from the Old Testament, I will tell of your name to my brothers in the midst of the congregation. I will sing your praise. And again, I will put my trust in him. And again, behold, I and the children God has given me. These are all sort of allusions to the Messiah from the Psalms and from Isaiah, the prophet. He continues, since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise partook of the same things, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver all those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery. For surely it is not angels that he helps, but he helps the offspring of Abraham. Therefore, he had to be made like his brothers in every respect so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God to make propitiation for the sins of the people. Woo! Dan, there is a lot there.
Yeah. So, yeah, since therefore the children share in the flesh and blood, he took on these things. He became these things, right? That through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil. So he's going to become like you to defeat everything that is killing you.
That's right. Yeah, and it's not an accident. I mean, you know, when he says it is the offspring of Abraham in verse 16 that he's come to save, again, that's not at the exclusion of those who don't have the natural lineage of Abraham. That's very clear throughout all of the rest of the New Testament. But of course, again, this tells us who he's writing to. He's writing to a Hebrew audience, and he wants to emphasize that he is the Jewish Messiah, because there are people in the midst that are beginning to wonder, is he really the Messiah that we were looking for
Yeah.
as the Jewish people? So he does want to emphasize this, and he will continue to emphasize this, the very Jewishness of Jesus's messianic reign throughout all of the letter or the sermon. And so, yes, he's made like his brothers in every respect so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest. I love this, Dan. I love the fact that what's emphasized about Jesus's work is that this, going through this, gives you the assurance that when you come to him as your high priest, that he is going to greet you with mercy and faithfulness.
If you read down through through the Old Testament, you'll find a lot of high priests weren't merciful or faithful. So,
That is correct.
But you get this one,
including the high priest that had Jesus crucified.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So you get a better one right here. You get that true, good and merciful high priest. And you like here that it talks about truly, it's not the angels that he helps, but he helps the offspring of Abraham. It's not the angels he made a promise to. It's Abraham, and that's the offspring of Abraham that he made a promise to.
Yeah, and the word used here when it says in service to God to make propitiation for the sins of the people, propitiation has this idea of a sacrifice that turns away the wrath of God or turns away wrath. And so it's a suitable sacrifice. It's a sufficient sacrifice. His blood is enough. Actually, the word for propitiation is often the word that was used in the Old Testament for the mercy seat of God on the Ark of the Covenant, where the blood would be sprinkled on the mercy seat, suggesting or telling the people that because of the blood that was given during that sacrifice, therefore God could be merciful to his people that were falling into sin. It's the same thing here. It's the same idea that Jesus has made the ultimate sacrifice of propitiation so that we would not face the consequences for our sin. So it says in verse 18, "For because he himself has suffered when tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted." So Jesus is one that understands all of what it is to be human, has succeeded in living the way that we are meant to live as human, and gives us, therefore, is there to for us to be a merciful and faithful high priest that can help us in our time of need. That will continue. You know, you think about another passage that will come later, that was testified somewhere in the book of Hebrews, where the author says that we are invited to boldly come to the throne of grace to find help in our time of need. Well, how often are we in a time of need? All the times.
All the time. All the time.
Never a time without it. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's good about this is that, too, is you have, I've heard people be like, is it that comforting to be like, oh, like, you know, Jesus is tempted, he knows, and you're like, yeah, like, but also he didn't have sin nature, so like, not exactly the same. Feel like, yes, he had an advantage, you know. And fair enough. He doesn't have like concupiscence, he doesn't have like a desire.
Dan, for explain concupiscence, please, to our audience.
Lower appetite.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically mm-hmm. what it is. It's the appetite for the lower things. Those things that you ought not be, or those things that you ought not do. He doesn't have that. But there's also this fact. You've never dealt with the devil directly. So you're battling your flesh and this kind of stuff. You never had the devil come to you in the wilderness and offer you the entire world if you just bow down and worship him. So
yeah.
So while it's true he doesn't have a sin nature, and so that's different than you and I, we're also just, for the most part, fighting with ourselves and fighting our own temptations, where Jesus is contending with the devil himself, trying to tempt him into things that we're never, ever tempted to do or be.
Yes. No, that's right. That's right. I mean, and the point of it is that, I mean, all throughout, you're going to hear this kind of language of him being sympathetic. He understands what it is to be human. And I got to say, there is a comfort to that. Yes, I know that, you know, he didn't have the same sin nature of us as us or anything. That's true. But goodness gracious, I need a God who does know what it's like to face, even if he hasn't been tempted into sin, knows what it's like to suffer. Right. I need a God that knows how to bleed. I need a God that knows how to face the pain of loss or being abandoned, because these are all human experiences that we go through as a result of living in a fallen world. He understands that. And I do find great sympathy in that. I mean, when I've gone through hard times, Dan, there is just something about someone coming alongside of you and saying, I understand what this is like. Mm-hmm. Just knowing you're not alone, knowing you're not alone is a comfort.
Oh, it's always better to suffer in the assembly of those who have likewise suffered than to suffer by yourself and think that somehow your suffering is extremely special and unique and nobody has ever felt this way or gone through this thing. With, I don't know if you know this, but there's billions of people on the planet. So the likelihood of you suffering something that is entirely unique to you is really an impossibility.
That's correct.
And you, of course, have this God who knows suffering. And so both of these things are true. Like, so you suffer together. You find people who have suffered. And it's always better to do it that way.
100%. It's true. It's so true. And so, you know, this separates, Dan, this separates Christianity from other religions, that we have a God who understands, knows very, very, very closely what it is to actually suffer. And there are great books about this. The Pain of God by Shusaku Endo is a great book about this. It's very unique to Christianity that we have a God that feels, that knows what it's like to feel, and knows what it likes to struggle.
Yeah, a God who's like been betrayed, rebelled against, lied about.
Yes.
You know, and then you have physical suffering, not just in those things, like being betrayed by your best friend or abandoned and all those kind of things, but also then like actual suffering of torture and death and agony, all of this stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes the Christian church gets knocked for emphasizing the suffering of Jesus too much, you know, and for being obsessed with it. But there's a reason there's a reason that is the case. Because human life, the longer you live it, you know that it's just part of the program, and it's nice. It's really important to know that you have a God who knows what it is to go through that.
Yeah.
So we dive into chapter 3. He says, therefore, holy brothers, you who share in a heavenly calling, consider Jesus, the apostle and high priest of our confession, who was faithful to him who appointed him, just as Moses also was faithful in all God's house. For Jesus has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses, as much more glory as the builder of a house has more honor than the house itself. For every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God. Now, Moses was faithful in all God's house as a servant to testify to the things that were to be spoken later, but Christ is faithful over God's house as a son. And we are his house if indeed we hold fast our confidence and our boasting in our hope. Dan, what a way to end today's episode, because it is all about what we will spend a lot of time talking about in the next few weeks, which is that Jesus isn't just greater than the angels. Jesus is greater than Moses, and in fact, greater than the law that Moses gives, which he's going to spend a lot of time discussing. We'll have to probably dive deeper into these first six verses to do justice to it next week. But it's a good way to end, to be reminded that yes, Jesus even is greater than Moses.
Yeah, this is good. I mean, next week we'll probably just start here again, you know, at verse one, and try to walk through this of what exactly is this author saying. But ultimately, what he's saying is, because you got to remember, we're talking about Hebrews that were flirting around with going back to the religious system and still having Jesus. Like, they're going to hedge their bets. They're going to try to have it both ways. And the author here is saying, you don't want to go back to Moses. That is a epic downgrade.
That is right. That's a good way for us to end it. There. Don't go back to Moses. It's an epic downgrade.
Epic downgrade. All right. That's it, man. We are out of time. So I will see you again next week.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, man.